welcome back to Hour 2 of We the People Radio. I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Bob's not on the phone right now because all our guests are on the phone. Everything is organized and situated, unlike the first hour that was a teensy bit chaotic.
That's all right. We like it that
way. You know, we're not happy without a little bit of chaos at the beginning. Otherwise, we don't function properly. And we'd like to thank our sponsor,
Powerhouse
Solar.
This is a chaos-driven show.
It is, too. You know, something about it. Maybe that's why I always, like, get smart as a kid. It was a precursor to what was going to happen later in life. But actually, yeah.
Sorry about that, Bill.
Yeah, actually, we're talking to the people who actually fight chaos. The real kind, not with, well, I don't know.
K-A-O-S.
We all have shoe phones now, so I guess we are all fighting chaos with
that's
our
right.
shoe phones. And so we've got Bruce Moran from Security Solutions Technology, and we've got Claire Lopez on here, who's a strategic policy and intelligence expert with a focus, easy for me to say, on national defense, Islam, Iran, and counterterrorism issues. So Claire is getting on the road here shortly, so we thought we'd let her kick off this hour with things that we might either be hearing that are screwed up in the media, which is wide open field for you there, Claire. You know, things that are being told to the American public that really they should pay attention to in a different way than maybe, because, you know, all this stuff with the Russian thing and all this downplays everything that you've worked on in the Middle East. The Middle East is still a really...
Oh, it's a mess.
It's a mess. And so, you know what? How about this? They always tell us that if we... you know, if we do things like restrict immigration or, you know, do extensive background checks on folks coming from these seven countries, that increases recruitment for people to fight against our country. Is that real, in your opinion?
Well, no, of course not. It's baloney.
That's awesome.
Let me mention quickly that I am actually, for the last 3 years, the Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy, Washington, D.C. think tank devoted, as our name suggests, to issues of national security. And I'd point you to our website, which is centerforsecuritypolicy.org, or a shorter one, securefreedom.org. And you'll find there a lot of our articles published, a number of monographs that the center has put out, and some short videos to watch as well on many of the topics that we're covering here today. So that would be one of the first places I would point people to for getting good information, good insights into what's going on. I would also point our listeners to Understanding the Threat, understandingthethreat.com, which is an organization founded by John Guandolo, with whom I work on teaching law enforcement across the country, along with Chris Gaubatz. And that website, too, is chock full of good information. You can't go wrong if you try those two websites.
And so we say them both one more time. Understanding the Threat.
My think tank is centerforsecuritypolicy.org,
right,
or securefreedom.org. And John Guandolo's is understandingthethreat.com.
That's nice. Claire, what is happening? What's your take on Turkey right now? I know that's kind of a precarious situation. Are we in threat of losing them as an ally, do you think?
We need a serious reassessment of U.S. policy towards Turkey. As many people listening may know, after the Ottoman Empire fell apart in the wake of World War I, back in the early part of the 20th century, what was left became known as the modern-day state of Turkey, and its leader at the first part of the 20th century was Mustafa Kemal, known as Atatürk, who very methodically and with a great deal of authoritarianism tried to modernize and secularize Turkey. The Turkish army stepped in 4 times during the 20th century to keep Turkey on its modernization and secularization path. But now, more recently with the rise of the AK Party, that is the Turkish Muslim Brotherhood Party,
right,
called Freedom and Justice Party, led by current now president Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Turkey has turned its back on the Kemal Atatürk era, and is rapidly becoming a neo-Ottoman jihad state aligned with Hamas. Hamas, of course, is the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, and devoted to jihad, quite frankly and openly devoted to jihad. What many people may not know, though, which is very important, is that the Turkish government at the highest levels is now working openly with the United States Muslim Brotherhood, a jihadist organization dedicated to the restoration of the caliphate and the imposition of Sharia worldwide here, too. So all of that as preface to saying, what ally?
Right, right. I know that whole thing is really ugly right now. And don't we still have bases in Turkey?
We have arrangements with the Turkish government. For instance, the U.S. Air Force has a cooperative sharing arrangement with Incirlik Air Force Base, which is a Turkish Air Force Base out of which U.S. planes, NATO planes, they're based there and fly out of there, for instance, on missions against the Islamic State across the border in what used to be called Syria.
How important is that base? I mean, if we were to lose that, is there something we can fall back on that's fairly close?
Well, it's very important. Its proximity, of course, to those particular battlefields makes it ideal. Could we use other Air Force bases in the region, of which we have many? Yes. But I think the first objective of this administration, the new Trump administration, must be first to define what are core compelling U.S. national security interests and objectives in that region, as well as elsewhere, but we're talking about that region, and then not respond in knee-jerk fashion to everything that happens week by week, but rather guided by that national security policy that is now set out, well thought out, and set out, promulgated, published, then we respond accordingly to the events of the day. And I think we've been doing it the other way around, backwards, mm-hmm. for much too long.
How influential is Russia in Turkey right now?
In Turkey?
Yes.
Not at all. They're rivals in what goes back to certainly the 19th century Rudyard Kipling's great game in that part of the world. They are rivals in the Middle East battlefields, for example, where Turkey long has supported the overthrow and the ouster of the Syrian minority Alawite clan dictator Bashar al-Assad, mm-hmm. while Russia is allied with Iran and Hezbollah to prop him up.
Right.
There are obviously discussions going on among all the key players, those I just mentioned, plus the United States, and other Middle East powers like Saudi Arabia, each of which is backing some set of opposing militias, of which there are literally thousands. But in this area, Turkey and Russia are rivals for power, not collaborators.
Correct. Yeah, that's always been the big problem over there, is there's so many different factions within these countries. You don't know.
You need a playbook.
You need a playbook, and you know who's your friend today might be your enemy tomorrow, and what arms you give somebody today could end up in your enemy's hands tomorrow. And so is there really a clear path forward for the United States over there right now?
Well, again, yes. As I said, the first thing we need to do is define our core compelling national security interests. And if getting into the middle of a 1,300-plus-year-old intra-Islamic sectarian fight between Shiites and Sunnis, with a bunch of ethnic groups, tribes, and foreign powers now thrown into the mix, if that is not our core compelling national security interest, then what are we doing?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What are we doing over there?
Yeah.
What are we defending? What are we promoting? What is the ultimate outcome or best-case scenario that we would like to see emerge? None of that has been defined. None of it.
Wow.
And yet we are throwing special forces over there. We've got aircraft over there. We've got supplies, as you just alluded to, of weapons and missiles and other kinds of hardware and ammunition, plus training to all sorts of militias, a great many of which, the majority of which, are jihadi. Do they even know what jihad means? Would they know what it means if a group dedicates itself to jihad, fi sabilillah, in the way of Allah? Would that matter to them? None of this has been addressed yet, and it needs to be before we waste one more drop of American blood or treasure.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that we've not addressed any of that, and for years, look at our involvement over there. I mean, we've just, I don't know what, just throwing mud on the wall and hoping something sticks?
Well, again, for what? What is the objective? What is the ultimate outcome, final best-case scenario that we seek to establish?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone's articulated that, certainly not in the prior administration, and I think this administration is still working on it.
Where do you think we are domestically? I know that you co-authored a book on Sharia, and that's something that people are concerned about, and I would say kind of aware of. I'm not sure the level of detail most Americans have with that. But where do you think we are here in the U.S. with these
guys?
We're
facing a very sophisticated and advanced insurgency domestically. That insurgency is led by the Muslim Brotherhood, which calls itself the Islamic movement, the global Islamic movement. The Brotherhood has been present in the United States in infiltrating what I call our key pillars of support of society, meaning academia, our courts, faith communities, government at all levels, certainly local law enforcement, media, society in the workplace in general, has been infiltrating all of those for at least the last 50 years. They have way head start on us. We have not even acknowledged yet that we are facing an insurgency domestically. And this is not about terrorism. Just take that word out of the vocabulary. We're not fighting terrorism. We are fighting to live free of Sharia. We're fighting to live free under our American Constitution and the laws derived from it. That is Article 6 of the Constitution, which, by the way, has nothing to do with the First Amendment protections offered for freedom of religion. Article 6 is about a legal system, our Constitution against any other that seeks to replace it, overthrow it, or put another in its place. Mm. So what the Brotherhood is doing here is openly, explicitly dedicated to overthrowing the Constitution and replacing it with Sharia, except because they're not doing it with violence and kinetic action of terrorism, many don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to see it. They don't know how to acknowledge it. They don't know how to counter it. And so we're in a very bad situation right now.
What do you...
All they have to say is...
Information operations.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And
depression.
All they have to say is that it's a religion, and everybody goes,
Well, we can't touch it. What do you think is the... what would be the, I guess, best response to that, to shutting that down in our country? Is there anything we can do?
Well, certainly a radio show like yours goes a long way to help in the most important thing, and that's education, informing people. So I thank you for that. And then those listening, once getting some information like this can add to that by their own study. Again, our website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org, John Guandolo's site, understandingthethreat.com, many other websites that are very useful, Bill Warner's website called Political Islam has some really short and very informative videos, 5 minutes or less, as well as some small booklets. So further education. And then engage. Engage with your family, your friends, your faith community. Be supportive of your local law enforcement as they are the front line of defense against this insurgency by the Muslim Brotherhood in this country. And so an engaged, informed citizenry, I think, is our best defense. And that's what we need to foster and to help.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's something that we do call it terrorism way too much. I think we misunderstand, we being Americans, I think we misunderstand what they really want to do.
Yeah, there's a threat there. It may not be a terrorist threat, but there is definitely a threat there to our way of life. And, I mean, look at England. England is learning that lesson the hard way right now, and they're going to have to try to roll it back, which I'm not sure they can at this point. What do you think, Claire?
I am unfortunately rather pessimistic about Britain, not just Britain, but Belgium, Netherlands, France, and Sweden top the list. They are already so badly infiltrated that the jihad in those countries already has moved from the pre-violent stage of subversion and infiltration to the violent stage of kinetic attacks on a daily basis.
Right.
France is going up in flames. I don't think most people realize that. They're up in flames. Britain is suborned. It already has close to 100 functioning Islamic tribunals or courts operating in Britain, and whose decisions the still extant parallel common law system is obligated by law to enforce.
Wow.
That is way farther along than where we are yet, but we don't want to get there. We want to look at that example and say, no, thank you.
What are they thinking?
But I'm rather pessimistic about Western Europe.
Multiculturalism
was such a big thing 10 years ago, and they just rolled it out, and this is the result. And I think you're right. Now they've actually gone from the nonviolent, you know, we're a peaceful group or whatever, and now it's we've got the numbers and we're going to force the change. And I think they're in big trouble. I think they're in big trouble to roll that back now.
Yeah, they are, and I don't see the willpower there. It's going to take a supreme effort of will. The French just showed with their most recent election, presidential election, and the election of Emmanuel Macron, and the rejection, essentially overwhelming rejection of Marine Le Pen and her agenda, which would have been to strengthen French national laws and borders and what they call over there laïcité, which means basically secularization in the public arena, in the government. Mm-hmm. All that was rejected, and French citizens are pretty much on their own right now, and I think they realize that, which will make them increasingly desperate. It's a very bad situation for France, but elsewhere too.
Yeah, it's funny. That election had a lot of parallels, I believe, with our last presidential election. We could have swung either way, and I think France now has decided to go the other way. And the repercussions from that, I think, are
going to be huge.
It's going to be
bad. What if they blame the Russians?
Well, there you go.
Yeah, the Russians did it.
The Russians did it.
That's always the plan.
The Russians are coming. Well, Claire, thank you for spending some time with us.
Sure.
We're going to have you
and
back.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Apologize for being late and apologizing for needing to run, but
that's what.
Glad for the time I could spend with you.
We actually had you on last week in an archive that you were on with Lyle Rapacki, Dr. Rapacki. And
yes,
it was like a year ago. And we were like,
right.
She was driving in the mountains then too. That's kind of weird.
Right, different mountains. But
you were driving around Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, you were in Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, today we're in an undisclosed location.
I'm in the eastern in the eastern mountains this time.
Thanks so much for coming on with us, and sorry we had to put Bruce on the back burner there. We'll bring him back here after the break and talk about a bunch more fun national security stuff. Happy Mother's Day to you,
so
and have safe travels.
Thank you very much. All righty,
you're listening to We the People. We're like a careening car out of control. We're going to swerve back on the roadway, though, and we're going to move back to some domestic national security stuff, or not. We don't know where Mr. Moran's going to go. He's had a lot of time to think about it. So we'll be back with our hostage, Bruce Moran, here on We the People.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give-a-damn's busted.
Happy Mother's Day.
Bruce?
Are we back?
Yeah. Hey, it's your turn.
Okay.
It's really hard when two people
Did
are on
you,
the phone.
Did you buy a baseball bat from Claire, the official one she signed, when she was playing with the Pittsburgh
No.
Did you know she was with the Pittsburgh Pirates for a year, but then they pulled her back into the company to work overseas?
No way.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. You can go to the website and check it out. Yeah, she has a baseball bat. She was batting like 325 that year.
Get out of here.
Yeah, we don't know if we should trust you or not. We know how you are.
That was before the surgery.
I was telling them on the break about how you and Claire and I had that little email back and forth about doing the program, you know, and my little signature block said the NSA is responsible for all spelling errors, and you wrote back, the NBA is responsible for all your spelling errors? And I'm thinking, that's super funny. Claire writes back, ? She's pretty no-nonsense.
Yep. Well, you have to be serious so much that you need to take a break. So, you know.
Well, I'm a big fan. I mean, you know, goofing off is, you know.
Yeah,
we're
in your DNA.
We're genetically hardwired for that. If we're not goofing off, we actually don't get anything done because then we're all jacked up with something. But, the things that she was talking about, you know, with the Middle East and all that.
Sure.
Okay, tie that back to the cybersecurity. Who are the main? I mean, does the Middle East have any cybersecurity guys? I mean, I don't think about them as being technologically.
They are very sophisticated.
Are they?
The Pakistanis? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't know. That kind of blows my thought process because they kind of live in. Their country's been bombed.
To people think, you know, the derogatory, if you want to call it derogatory.
Yeah, I guess.
Call them camel jockeys, but these guys are high tech.
All the way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole Saudi system is based on American technology.
Yeah. Okay.
The wax and everything they have there was supplied by the United States government. You know, protect their. You know, the oil fields, because of what happened with Saddam Hussein in Kuwait when he went through there and, you know, burned all the oil wells. So, I mean, even Kuwait itself is our base of operations for us. You know, we have our Air Force base and things of that nature. So what you're looking at is we're thinking of people from the Middle East. They're not backward at all. But what they do have and what people don't recognize is a big black market and underground economy. And that's where the sale of chemical weapons can be done. General Mattis, as you know, he's head of our Department of Defense, had recognized that on April, I think it was like 17th or 18th, 21st. And he talked about ISIS having the capability to have weapons and chemical at that of that nature. So what we're looking at here is what's going on in Iraq, what's going on in Syria, and how can that be distributed to the United States? Well, if you know in Raqqa, where their headquarters is for ISIS, they have their weapons chemical labs there. And how many people, you know, are going there from what countries? Do we have this discussion before?
I don't think so.
Uh-uh.
Okay. So where are the recruits coming from for ISIS and for Al-Qaeda, because Nusra Front was part of ISIS and they broke off last year, and 3,000 of them from the Syrian groups had joined Al-Qaeda now. So you have a caliphate state now that's assimilated into a Al-Qaeda type of environment. They're calling them more humane. And then you have the caliphate state that's under ISIS control. And that's headquartered out of Raqqa and Mosul, which is falling right now. So you're seeing a whole different landscape, which Claire's talking about. What do we want to do, how we want to do it, and how are we going to draw up our strategic planning for the area, given all these different, you know, things are shape-shifting for our national security and how we're going to act and put boots on the ground or not. And that's what we're both talking about in the same factor. So if you're looking at Raqqa, which is the headquarters of ISIS, having chemical weapon capabilities, and how many countries do people come there from? What would you think from around the world?
Jeez,
I wouldn't hazard a guess.
Take a guess.
100,000?
Come on, Bob.
What was the question?
No, no, how many countries?
How many countries?
Are coming from to go into the fight for ISIS. And you have some Uyghurs coming in from China, too.
I don't know,
so
10?
It's just not what we're thinking it is to be.
I don't know. I mean, 10, 20?
99.
100.
Ooh, no, Bob is the winner.
Wow. 100 different countries are going there.
More, but we'll go with the 100. And so if President Trump is making a reasonable decision to contain them in the six countries that he named, and they're coming in from 100 different countries, what is he saying? He's saying, we're going to do the right thing to protect the American people, because what happens when they go back home for dinner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do they bring with them?
Yeah, and if they're all giving, we'll call them CDs or flash drives, and they have all the information on making bombs and making chemical weapons,
yep.
Then what does that say? They're all over. They're all over the world.
Well, I think San Bernardino.
Of course, and now we're locking them down.
Yeah.
We're trying the best we can now with President Trump in there. As you know, it's the borders have been more secure, and he's done a great job. But there needs to be more action, more tactical operations. A wall needs to be built, a fence. However, it's deemed possible to cover certain areas. We need boats in other areas on the Rio Grande. We need technology in place, drones. But let's get back to what I was talking about.
And we need to break up the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah.
Yes. And we don't need sanctuary states, you know.
No.
Yeah, that kind of goes without saying.
We won't mention any names of whose states they're coming from.
California. Yeah.
But, well, I'm going to get back to the serious point here. So if we have these people in these two particular countries, Iraq and Syria, and they're given the technologies of chemical weaponry and to make IEDs. And the IEDs today from 1992 to 2017 are much more sophisticated. As we saw, the Russian plane blew up. Part of it came apart with a soda pop can. So the technology has gone beyond what people think. And remember when the planes were closed down? Because they can put them into the computers now.
Mm.
And they shut down the flights coming around the world out of those...
Out of the laptops.
Mm. Yeah, that was just 2 weeks ago.
So
the technology has been integrated into very sophisticated, highly mailable ways to hide it in different kinds of compartments.
So Bruce, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, so we have all these folks, you know, I mean, we're a global economy now, and people are flying into the United States from all different points. Mm-hmm. Their first point of contact as far as security would be, say, TSA. They come in, TSA asks them a few questions, search their bags.
And customs, too. They have to go through.
Are they really equipped to catch any of these guys? Or I mean, I'm sure they probably pick up some fraction.
They have to look at the point of entry first and where they're coming from, and then they have to be traced from there.
Uh-huh.
So if they're going from Yemen, right, then they go to Tunisia, then they go to Costa Rica, then they go to Mexico. And then maybe they fly into Dallas, or they fly into Chicago, or Reading. They like that Reading Airport there. They get in a small plane and they land.
Sure,
there.
Sure. Now, is that does
that's how it's done? That's what I'm saying. So,
and do they check that? To, I mean, do they have the technology to
the
trace them that far?
I didn't quite understand what you said.
I mean, when somebody comes in to say Dallas. And they've been to Mexico and all these other different points before they actually got here. Is that all information that
they should have that on their passport?
Okay, so that's what they're looking at.
Yeah. What else can they do?
Right.
They have false passports.
Right.
So you got to know who they are, what their real names are, and how to differentiate between those who are coming in for terrorist activity and those who are not. And that's the question Claire was asking about, you know, the infiltration and how they come across the borders. But the wherewithal from the customs and immigration, you know, on the border, where they're coming through, has to be in the capacity where you're working your NCIC, that's your National Crime Information Center, with Interpol, and those groups of people, where they see these people before, and now how do they get from point A to point F, you know?
Right.
And they're saying they had a different passport. That's the kind of information that has to be shared. Now we have Five Eyes. You know about Five Eyes?
No.
Okay, Five Eyes it's like an NSA, but it's five countries working together. You know, it's Australia, the United States, Canada, you know, European countries. And so we got five countries that are sharing intelligence. Now, they have 14 eyes. So if it goes to 14 eyes, then you have the other European countries coming on board and sharing the information. So the information technology has to be equipped to handle what you're talking about. Do mm-hmm. we have it there now? No. Should it be there? Yes. President Trump wrote an executive order this week on cybersecurity being upgraded and updated to handle this kind of a situation, because it's coming in not only from servers, it's not only coming in from cyber attacks, it's coming in from information that we have on people, and we don't know where they're at and what they're doing, how they're getting here. See what I mean? All that has
right.
to be fully integrated into one, what I call crisis readiness, crisis preparedness program. So the Defense Department can work with the State Department, which is your, you know, immigration, you know, and then they got to work with the, you know, board, that's DHS, and that's Kelly's position over there. So they have to integrate all that much more on a higher level, because we're very vulnerable in so many different ways, because we're open country, open borders, and
sure.
thinking.
But we're not just, I think people have to realize, we're not just trying to keep the bad guys out. We also have to be vigilant on
about
controlling the information.
In your own country, what Claire's talking about, and it's absolutely right.
Well, the information as well. I mean, the transfer of information that can hurt us coming and going out of this country would be a huge task to try to control. And like you say, they can transmit information on how to build bombs, how to coordinate attacks, all that kind of stuff. And that just takes a lot of manpower to try to put your thumb on that, doesn't it?
Well, we can increase our humans, which is our human intelligence, and our signal service, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to take into consideration that there needs to be a joint partnership between the private-public sector. Because it affects the banking industry, it affects the trading industry, the
right.
securities industry. You got money transfers, see what I mean?
Right, right.
You have all these things have to be a little bit more in line with each other, so information sharing is on a higher level. Now, we do have things in place for counterterrorism and that sort, and, you know, drug laundering, money, and things of that nature. But the nature of the beast is such more highly evolved that the American people have to contribute more to the what I call situational awareness, or being aware of what's going on in their own communities to help prevent it from happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Claire's saying. There's a lot of misinformation out there, and people aren't being watchful enough. Like in the old days when I went to, you know, down the street, you know, if I was two blocks away, they knew my parents.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did something wrong, they tell my uncle, they tell my ma, they holler at me. Then I come, you know, when my dad comes home, I get hollered at again. Then I go back on the street, they say, don't do that again. You know, but you don't have people that are aware of what's going on in their communities, because everybody is more of a nuclear family. So the information technology has to be addressed to people who are on their phones all the time. The young kids today are very app-oriented, so they have to be educated not to just stick their heads in the apps and get what they want, you know, it's immediate gratification, but to look what's going around in their environment so they can help protect and save our country from
right.
this kind of insidious behavior that's going on. With Claire was talking about the Muslim Brotherhood. I talk about it with the drug cartels. I can talk about it with the pedophile rings. I can talk about it with, you know, criminal activity in Chicago. All that's part and parcel to what Donald Trump is saying. We need law and order in the United States. That's the cybersecurity side. That's the information side. That's how we're going to integrate it. That's how we have to look at it holographically rather than just systems. And they're working, and people are going to be controlling systems. The systems are only as good as the people that control them, and you need more humans. In other words, people on the ground to actually see what's going on and to relay the information back so the systems themselves can be updated and upgraded and be much more robust. mm-hmm. and helpful to people on the ground.
What's the what's
does that make sense? I mean,
oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm talking from the technological point of view, back into the criminal activity on the ground, and I think what President Trump is doing is executing what I'm talking about, and they have a larger task about them because we had years and years of not doing this. And the people need to be people on the border understand what I'm talking about because they see it every day. But people inside, you know, up in where you're at, Reading, and, you know, in the northern suburbs of Chicago or where there's no action going on, up in Minneapolis, they know about it because the Somalis were causing problems. But, you know, it's not part and parcel to the consciousness of the country to take that into consideration. It has to be. It has to be changed because the idea of protecting your country has gone by the wayside. There's no more World War II veterans around to tell you what happened historically to protect the country. Most of them have gone by the wayside. Mm-hmm. The Vietnam veterans are going. And now we have the Iraqi, you know, freedom fighters and that. But they're all in the minority now, the Veterans Administration and those people. As much as we talk about they need the proper care for post-traumatic stress syndrome, but they're the ones that know how to protect the country, but the rest of the American public are, I can say, out to lunch in a way which is very disheartening to me. As a
yeah.
Person.
So
that's
so,
a nice way of putting it.
I totally agree with what you're saying. And what would you, how would you rate our system right now as far as lacking in actual human bodies patrolling a lot of these areas? Like you take Border Patrol or, you know, the folks
well,
that
you
are
actually 24/7 operations on the border.
Right.
And Chuck had designed a system. I don't know if we talked about it on your radio station. I think we did. And it requires drones and boats, and there's also seismic readers that need to be placed there, so they won't dig under, and they can't fly over. And if they're using projectiles, you'll be able to trace them. So this that's the geographical seismic tracers we have in the ground, which tell you if people are running, people are walking. It could differentiate between animals and humans.
Mm-hmm.
So this technology is out there. We can just put it on the ground, and there goes the border.
Right, right. So do you think...
And it's going to be run... You know what OEMC is? A operations system? CENTCOM system?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's going to be run the same way.
Right.
You'll have people 24/7 guarding your border and technology there in place.
Realistically... How much of a wall, an actual wall, do you think we need when we incorporate all the technology with it?
We're modeling ours over the Israeli because Chuck worked on the stuff overseas, and that system works very well. You know, and some, you know, there's a capability to put a wall up or combination of wall and defense at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Each particular area has its own ways of protecting the border, and some are, you know, through water, and you have to have a certain way the technology reads things sonically in water. See what I mean?
Right.
Each one has a peculiar way, but on a whole, what we're talking about is 24/7 lockdown, and it'll work. You know,
right.
Whatever President Trump is saying, and everybody's you know, working on. We want the contractors to be protected. That's what we're talking about on our end of the contracting. You have independent contractors come down there, and you put the security with them, and so they're not shot at by snipers from the drug cartels, and because they're trying to run their drugs across the border.
Sure.
And you make sure that it's 24/7 surveillance on their construction, so you know they're making their construction on time and what they're doing and what troubles they run into. So if that means we're having 25 construction sites on the border, if they're running into problems at construction site number 2, they can pass it on to border construction site number 23 or 25, help them understand how to deal with the same problem.
Right.
So you have, we call that pullback. You're able to pull information back and send it out right away.
So it's really
done within, you know, within hours rather than within days.
Right.
You don't have to shut anything down.
So it's more of a regional...
You know, it's a business plan model that President Trump goes by. brilliant, you know.
Mm-hmm.
President Trump is making a lot of decisions that governments will never make, you know.
Well, these getting rid of...
Three Ps. You know?
Well, like, we laughed because when he fired Comey, when Comey was out of the office, that's exactly what you would do in business.
That's right.
I mean, you would never tell someone in business, hey, I'm, you know, like, you're gone in, like, a week, and give them a chance to, you know, steal all the
confidential,
the customer lists, and, you know, depending
on... Drive.
Yeah, whatever... industry you're in, but that was pretty much of a business decision.
You have to sign non-compete clauses and everything.
Oh yeah,
you're fired. Is boom, done the same.
Yeah, that's true. That's a business thing too.
Sign this and you're out of here.
That's right. All right, we better take one more quick break.
Comey had to promise not to go to work for the CIA.
Nice one. All right,
we'll be out of here for a different reason.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes here. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
We can't tell you why you're out of here. We'd have to kill you first.
Yeah, we'll figure out what we're going to do during this break.
Keep walking, keep on your toes, and don't stop. Freedom to get going, lots to be learning, lots to be knowing about people. You gotta reach them, sit them right down, then you gotta teach them about freedom. You gotta win it, gotta put yourself smack dab in it.
Update on the FBI's investigation of Secretary Clinton. What I want to do is tell you what we're recommending, but first, let me tell you what we found. 110 emails, 52 email chains have been determined to contain classified information.
What difference at this point does it make?
8 of those chains are top secret, 36 of those chains secret, and 8 contain confidential information.
What difference at this point does it make?
Everything I did was admitted. There was no law, no regulation.
Secretary Clinton should have known that an unclassified system was no place for that conversation.
I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email.
None of these emails should have been on any kind of unclassified system, not even Gmail.
But first of all, nothing was marked classified.
To the contrary,
nothing was marked classified.
There is evidence that
nothing was marked classified.
Now let me tell you what we found.
Oh my God.
110 emails.
It was not the best choice.
52 email chains.
It was a mistake.
Have been determined to contain classified information.
What difference at this point does it make?
8 of those chains were top secret.
Was it the best choice?
6 of those chains.
I said it was a mistake.
8 contained confidential information.
What difference at this point does it make?
With respect to our recommendation, this is going to be an unusual statement in at least a couple of ways. Although there is evidence, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case. I know there will be intense public debate. I know there will be intense public debate. I know there will be intense public debate. Public debate.
What difference at this point does it make?
110 emails.
It wasn't the best choice.
52 email chains.
I made a mistake.
It was determined to contain classified information.
What difference at this point does it make?
8 of those chains are top secret.
It was not a good choice.
6 of those chains.
I said it was a mistake.
And 8 contain confidential information.
What difference at this point does it make?
Okay, that's actually a video.
Yeah, really?
Yes, so for those of you who enjoyed the video, you can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. It's at the bottom of the page. The graphics are funny. And actually, the sheriff sent me that this morning. He must have seen the topic online, and he shoots me a link to that. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic.
Louise.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. We didn't want to close out without playing that for you.
Okay, I I appreciate that.
When she goes, oh my
God. That's how I think. It's so ridiculous.
It is.
So crazy that you got to laugh at it, but then you got to cry at the same time.
I know. But at the part where she's like, oh my God.
I know.
It's like, just, it's funny because it's all in their own words, but whoever did that was really.
Yeah, they took some time. They did it right.
Really genius. Do you think, what are the odds, just, I mean, nobody can know this for a fact, but what are the odds that a new FBI director will go back into all that?
Oh, there's three ongoing investigations right now. That's what I was saying as we started the program. And any one of those could lead back to what they were initially doing. And some people are talking about the Clinton Foundation. Maybe they want to go investigate there, and they're talking about uranium going to the Russians. So maybe this is a big smoke and mirrors to prevent them and put the blame on the Trump administration rather than looking at the how the Russians were affiliated with the Clinton Foundation and selling them uranium and things of that nature. So I don't know how they want to hear it. But what I initially talked about was that executive order, 13587. And that what I want to lay out here is that we were talking about how Comey needed to have peer review.
Right.
But Hillary Clinton was responsible for 13587.
Oh.
In other words, when she was in office, everything that was done for what we would consider a classified breach that you need to cover or any kind of attack, that was her sole responsibility as being the Secretary of State. So if you given the fact that she had an unsecured server and she was responsible for securing stuff, 1 and 1 doesn't make 2.
Mm-hmm.
No.
See, that's what I was talking about. That's why I want to bring it back to James Comey having a problem with it, because he was locked into his investigation, okay? And then you had people who were responsible prior to him, who was actually Hillary Clinton in her position as Secretary of State, having the authority to have that information protected under her watch. She was a vanguard for protecting classified information under her watch, and she herself didn't do it. That's what I was talking about. That's the big contradiction.
Well,
that comes up in an executive order 13587.
That's
huge to me, but
oh, absolutely. Well, one of the points you brought up I thought was really good, and we're going to run out of time. We probably won't be able to talk about it for
a long time.
About
a minute and a half.
You had mentioned that we need some sort of a system put in place so that this sort of thing, meaning a president that probably doesn't really like this country, and I don't think our system was really set up to protect us from that, who has oversight over a attorney general who has no interest in enforcing our laws.
How about the entire investigative community?
Right. I mean, what do we do when it starts at the top and these guys know that, you know, the president's not going to do anything about it and he is actually encouraging this kind of behavior? I don't think we've ever been set up to fight that kind of a fight.
We are now. We're fighting a fight as we're talking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
We fought it at the ballot box.
Yeah. Program has changed.
Everybody who is supporting the president now knows that it's insiders, some call it the deep state, some mm-hmm. call it, you know, whatever you want to call it, but there's a lot of insidious behavior going on to usurp him, undermine him, not only him, but the U.S. Constitution, and if you want to bring Claire's position in, usurp the Constitution that way, you know. So there are countervailing forces that are working together now. You'll see people from I would say the drug cartels would probably match themselves up with the gangs, would match themselves up with the ISIS that needed weapons.
Sure.
The arms industry is, we didn't even talk about that.
No, we got
the black market.
We have got
a lot more to talk
tons
about.
Of stuff. And you know what? Before we, I know we got like 10 seconds, but.
Okay, happy Mother's Day to everybody.
Thanks
out there.
A million.
Thank you for being our moms.
And if you can send us anything that we can pass on to the public on ways for them to protect their own cybersecurity, I'd love to post that online.
Thanks, Bruce, for coming on today.
Okay, I have one for Intel Chip, so we can send you that.
Okay. Nice. Shoot me that on email, and we'll do that.
Okay, thank you.
To our guest, Bruce Moran.
God bless everybody.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And Bob, Bill, see you next week. We've got a great show next week. Pour No More. This guy has a private industry way to break welfare. I think you'll like the program. It'll be interesting.
Thank you, Bill and Aaron and Bruce. This is KCNR Shasta Reddick.